to the Hacking Happy podcast. My name is Penny Lacasso, and I'm the world's first happiness hacker on a bold quest to teach 10 million women how to flourish on their terms by 2025. The Hacking Happy podcast is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations. I'd like to pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This podcast is designed to help you reignite your spark, supercharge your energy, and channel it towards injecting more joy, presence, calm, and meaningful work in each day. If that sounds like something you could use a little more of, let's get started. Hello, beautiful happiness hackers, and welcome to another episode of the Hacking Happy podcast. Today, I am joined by someone who I'm extremely curious about because we've not met before, but I've been watching her online for a bit. Kate Toon, otherwise known as like the mother or the guru of SEO.
Well, thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited for this conversation. I love doing a podcast, but for some reason, following your energy online, I'm like, this is going to, I don't know, I have a high expectation.
I'm much more tedious in person, I'm afraid, but I'll do my best.
First and foremost, I've got to say, I have to fangirl you a little bit in terms of your dress sense. I freaking love your boldness with your clothes, your colour and your patterns.
That's a new thing. I mean, I'm a bit of an old goth, if I'm honest, and, you know, used to just be all in black. My son used to call me a middle-aged emo. But there's a brand that I follow, Klabui Fashions, and she's all about this dopamine dressing. Have you heard of this? Where, like, oh, no, it's a big thing, like, that you can get dopamine just from wearing bright colours and clothes that make you happy, so clothes that are comfortable and bright and bring a smile to your face. So I've really started to try and embrace a bit of colour. I even got a whole pink outfit the other day, obviously subliminally influenced by Barbie. I'm trying. And one of the things I hate about my breed of humans, entrepreneurs, is they either seem to wear caftans or pencil skirts, and I don't look good in either. So I want to wear trainers, not high heels, and comfy leggings, not pencil skirts.
Oh, I love that. Well, you're rocking it. Let's just say you're rocking it.
Okay,
let's start with my favorite question where I start every episode. And there's no right or wrong answer to this question, which is why I love it. Tell us who you are as a human being.
I've listened to a few episodes and listened to some answers for this, I must admit. Who am I as a human being? God, that's such a hard question, isn't it? I think I'm a creative person. I think I'm kind and generous. I love being a mom to my son and my dog. Yeah, I think I'm a little bit odd. I feel like sometimes I'm on the outside looking in, but then as I go through this world, I feel like a lot of people feel like they're on the outside looking in. So I wonder who's actually in the middle, because most of us...
I think you've touched on something really beautiful, which is this innate need as a human to belong, and how it's so funny how so many of us are searching for belonging. And like you say, we're all trying to just fit in and just connect. And yet, like, it's like, who really is in the middle feeling like I've got this all going on and it's all sorted out? Even at, I don't know how old you are, but like I'm at 48, you know, and it's like an eternal, what do you call, practice.
Yeah, a quest. I'm 49. It is an eternal quest. I mean, I think through the process of, I've always felt a little bit on the outer, and like I kind of start from a baseline of probably everyone doesn't really like me that much, and therefore I have to be super gregarious and wave my arms around to get people to like me. And then the process of doing this whole book thing that I'm doing at the moment has made me realize that maybe I am on the in. Maybe I'm just in an inn in a smaller little group of weirdos, but maybe I am that person who's in the inn because the reaction has been so positive. Mm. Even my snarky, dead inside British soul is like impressed by it. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. So you've caught me on a bad day, Penny. I should have had more coffee. I'm not answering very articulately. Forgive me.
No, I don't want to. That I want the real and raw, which is what I seem to be getting, which I love. Okay. You talked about the inner weirdo, which I absolutely love, because what we see so often is that when you embrace that, because the reality is we're all weirdos, right? And when you
raise that. Like, that's what connects with people. And that's why I say I've been following you since I heard about you. I'm like, I love, like, you just seem so, I hate the word authentic, but you do seem like who you are seems like who you are, if that makes sense.
It's true. And one of the things I've found is I've been to lots of sort of events where I've met people who I've followed online and the meeting of them has been super disappointing. Like, they are nothing like the persona that they put out online. And you feel a bit cheated, to be honest, because you're like, who have I been following all this time? I've been following an artifice, an avatar. And one of the things I've enjoyed doing my little book tours is I've met probably 250 people in the last month, which is insane. As a little introvert like me who lives in an office in her knickers all week. And every single person without fail has said, you're just like I thought you'd be, which to me is a lovely, lovely compliment, because that means I am being me, and I'm me when you meet me as well. Do you know what I mean?
I love that. How old is your son?
My son is 14 now, just turned 14 a few days ago.
Okay, beautiful. Only ask, I have a son who's about to turn 13.
That's good times, good times.
Well, and it's interesting, right, because we're going to start to talk about, you know, your journey, being a mum, entrepreneurship and all of that sort of stuff. But one thing that's been coming up a lot lately with the women that I work with is that, you know, there's this idea of life stages when it comes to kids, and I don't think we talk about it enough. And I think it's so important, because you'll get mums who have got, like, two kids under the age of four, and they're watching mums like, for example, you and I with kids that are 13, 14, and they're saying, well, how come I can't do all of this? How come I can't make my business work and have the same sorts of things going on? And it's like, you're at a different stage. Yeah, you need to, there's a bit of self-compassion that needs to come in here, because the stage of life that you're at with your children will determine what you actually have the capacity to do without killing yourself in the process. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, someone was talking to me the other day and she's like, you know, I feel like I'm so unproductive. I do all the productivity hacks. I do the to-do list. And I just feel like I've got too much to do and I can't get through it. And I said, you know why that is? Do you want to know the real secret, the real reason it is? It's because you've got too much to do.
Yeah.
That's it. It just is what it is. And, you know, having a 14-year-old now, he needs me in the way that he needs me. He kind of needs me when he needs me. It's very different. Like, it's I have to be available, but he doesn't need me a lot of the time. That for me, this Sunday, he's having a trip to a local sort of bigger town, going to the cinema with his friends. It's a big deal. They're getting the train. It's the first time he's done it. He's going to be out most of Sunday. I'm dropping him off and picking him up. I have a whole Sunday to myself. I can't remember the last time I had a whole Sunday to myself. Do you know what I mean? So, very different, very different stage. And, you know, that whole comparison piece is the killer, isn't it? It's the killer of dreams, the killer of souls, the killer of happiness. And can't compare someone's today to your yesterday. It's, you know all of that. I'm sure you talk about that all the time. But yeah.
But it also disconnects you from what you actually want. Like, that's what I think is really interesting, right? You get so caught up in what everyone else has got going on. You're not even connected to what actually lights a fire in your soul. So let's use that as a segue to go to tell us what you wanted to be when you were a little girl.
I wanted to be a teacher. I really wanted to teach in school. And in some way or another, I kind of am. After that, I kind of wanted to work in magazines. I wanted to work in trashy magazines after university. And I wasn't able to do that for various reasons. And so I've worked in advertising and kind of skirted around it. I think fundamentally, I always wanted to do something to do with writing. And I have in various forms over the years. Writing has been my bread and butter. Now I'm actually writing books, which is my dream. And ultimately, hopefully in about 5 or 6 years' time, I will stop writing businessy books and start writing novels, which is my dream, dream, dream.
Oh, wow. So take us back, right? You've had, like, your business journey is fascinating, and we'll touch on that. But you've been in business now. You've been, you know, your own boss for 10 years. What were you doing before what you're doing now? And what was the catalyst for change? Like, I'm guessing something about becoming a mother probably had something to do with this.
Well, actually, I've been in business just over 14 years, because the catalyst to me becoming a business person was literally getting up the duff. So I was working in advertising. I hated it, to be honest. I was on my way to being like the GM of an agency, had a big team. I'm not the best at managing big teams. Someone was always crying. If it wasn't a member of my team, it was me. But I thought I was trapped, because I'd actually been told I couldn't have kids. And so I thought I was going to have to be a career person, because otherwise, what was I going to do. Do you know what I mean? My husband and I had planned to like buy a white sofa and travel a lot. And then I got pregnant and I left my high paid advertising job when I was 5 months pregnant. So I've never not had a business baby and a baby at the same time. They've grown together through the phases. So my business was like a annoying toddler, never doing what I wanted it to do, keeping me up at night. And then it became like an easygoing 6, 7, 8 year old, such a good time. And now it's a bit of an unruly teenager. So my business has followed the same path as my child, really.
So talk to us about clarity, right? So many women, so I work with, you know, a lot of high performing women who want to make shifts in their careers. And sometimes that'll be in large corporations, but often it will be stepping out of corporate and into their own business. And one of the things that holds them back is a lack of clarity around where to go. And I always say, when I turned my life upside down in pursuit of happiness, I had no fucking idea what I was doing. There wasn't any clarity, but I knew that I had to reset the foundations in order for the clarity to unfold. And I always say that the action breeds the clarity. So how did you work out what this journey into your own business would look like? How did you get clarity?
Same as you. I mean, I think at the beginning it was just a swirling mass of bits and bobs, no idea what I was doing. My primary goal in the beginning was time focused. I wanted to not have a full-time job so I could spend more time with my son because I'd waited so long to have him. And then after a while, it became very money focused because I realized that I could make, you know, turn that dial up dramatically and make more money than I could have done as a wage person. And then it became about ego. And I wanted to be famous and I wanted to speak on stage. And then it became about respect. I wanted to have the respect of my peers. And now it's probably come full circle back into time and just wanting to live a nice life. I don't have a big why. My big why is I want to have a nice day. I want to have as little drama as possible. I want to be able to go to the gym, watch a bit of Netflix with my son. That's literally it. I just want to have a drama-free, nice chill life and pursue things outside of work as well. So I've gone through this bizarre journey and I've felt for a long time, I'm always asked on podcasts, what's your why? Why are you doing it? And I'm like, I don't have that why. I don't have a big why. And I don't know why I have to have a why. Can I not just get on with it? I don't think everything needs to have a lofty vision. If you have one, amazing, amazing. But if you don't have one, don't feel bad about it.
Yeah, but also don't let it stop you, right? From living the life that you want. And it's so interesting what you say, because as a student of psychology, one of the best places to start to realign your life to things that actually do give you meaning and do make you feel energized every day is just saying, what would the ideal day look like within the constraints of, you know, like, you know, I'm not, I don't know, driving a Lamborghini, not that sort of shit, but I mean, not the superficial stuff, but like when you wake up in the morning, what are the small and simple things you can put in your day that would make you feel good if you did them consistently?
I love that. That is exactly my thinking as well. What's the ideal day? And, you know, expand that out. What's the ideal month? Because people often put very high expectations on a single day, you know, and therefore they don't meet them and then they feel bad about themselves. So, you know, over a month, what would you like to achieve over a month? Would you like to maybe have one nice event with your kids? Would you like to go to the gym 10 times? You know, if you do better than that, amazing. But, you know, yeah, that's literally it. Just architecting your life to give you joy, as much joy as possible. My big thing, Penny, is I think people get confused about what happy means to themselves and they actually make themselves miserable in the pursuit of happiness.
Without a doubt.
They got it skewed and they're killing themselves to reach a goal. And then suddenly you reach that goal. For me, I had this perfect example, like, wouldn't it be amazing if I made this much money? And then I had one day in my business where I made $150,000 in 8 hours because I put my course on sale and it just did amazing, right? That's revenue. And I thought, you know, surely when I do that, I'm going to feel amazing. I felt absolutely nothing because it wasn't tied to anything. It was meaningless. Do you know what I mean? Funny now, I sell one copy of my book for like $30 and I get a little tingle of joy. So, because it has meaning. It's not about necessarily having a why, but it is giving each thing in your business and your life meaning. Why are you doing this? What does it mean to you? And just being clear on that so you don't make yourself unhappy by trying to be happy, which is weird, but I hope you know what I mean.
I wrote about this in my book. You know, happiness is not an end state. It's not a goal. It's a way of being.
It's a state, isn't it?
It's a state. It's how you show up. And it's like, you know, there are, I always say there are two ways to look at everything. For every situation, you can look at it from a space of positivity and opportunity, or from a space of woe is me and this is shit and it's never going to work. And you get to choose which one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I completely agree with you. I just think that the pursuit of happiness, which is certainly not what I teach, even though my business is called Hacking Happy, it's setting you up for failure. It's not an end state. You won't magically arrive there. Life is like a roller coaster and you'll have good days and bad days. It's being able to have the support, the resources around you to be able to navigate every emotion that life throws at you and know that you can come out the other side just a little better than what you were yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the brain plays tricks on us, doesn't it? It tells us that our happiness is in a different time zone. Like it was either we were happier then and we will be happier when. And it also tells us that happiness is in the hands of other people. You know, I'll be happy when this person gives me this money or when I get affirmation from that person. You know, the number of people, myself included, who seek affirmation from strangers on the internet. And there's nothing wrong with that to a degree. We all need a little bit of a dopamine of someone saying, you look nice in that picture, that cake you made is great. But sometimes you can get too far down that spiral where you're literally living for the dopamine hit of a like on social media. And, you know, when that starts to happen, I need to kind of take a step back and go and hug a tree and stroke a dog and get my oxytocin and my serotonin somewhere else.
Let's talk about a shared passion, because you've alluded to it. And I know when we were exchanging emails, sorting this out, we touched on it, but I'm really interested because we both love to lift weights.
Yeah.
Oh, it's massive for me, right? So I'm really interested because I have a theory on this, but how did you end up lifting weights and what does it do for you? How does it support you as a mum, as a business owner?
I think it began just as a weight loss thing. You know, I put on an awful lot of weight when I was running my business. I mean, I was very close to burnout. I was living in a wine and coffee cycle and really using food for happiness and reward and consolation. So I got very overweight and then I spent 2 years trying to lose that weight, which is really hard. So it started almost as a punishment and then it became a pleasure. But the biggest thing for me is when I gave up alcohol and I lost that horrible dopamine hit that you get from alcohol, I needed to have something to replace it with, both to keep my mind occupied, but also to find fresh dopamine. My dopamine receptors were screwed, right? So now it gives me a sense of achievement and pleasure. It makes me feel strong. I feel like I'm doing something for future me, staving off osteoporosis and all those other things. And I just feel like a beast at the gym. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do it to look, there's a meme. It's like, I don't want to lift weights to look pretty. I want to lift weights to fight bears in the woods. I want to fight bears in the woods. Not too much because I like bears. But yeah, it's joyous. And there's a bit of a gym culture, which at first seems intimidating. But now I go with my son every morning. So it's a massive bonding for us. But yeah, there's nothing better. I have become one of those people that love going to the gym, that misses the gym when I don't go, that chooses hotels based on the gym.
Oh my God, that's me! Absolutely. When my assistant is booking, I'm like, does it have a gym? And you need to look at a picture because it can't be like three weight sets
and a shit running machine. Yes.
I always say what's interesting to me about the weightlifting is when my body feels stronger, my mind feels stronger.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting, the connection between the two. I'm really interested, is there a PB that you've achieved recently that you're extremely proud of?
Oh, I managed to hip thrust, I think, 60 kilos, which I don't think is actually very good. I have to make sure that I'm, again, don't turn the gym into a freaking tick list.
Yeah. Like,
you know, there's a lot for me, you know, like I would like to, you know, I'm always like trying to stay on top of my weight, perimenopausal, but I must just enjoy the process. So I try not to focus too much on PBs and stuff because I'm still on, you know, the leg thing, the leg flippy thing where you flip your legs.
Yeah, leg extensions, yeah.
I'm still on freaking six. I cannot get to seven. Like I do my 12 reps and the last rep I'm dying, I'm hitting my thighs to try and make me do it. And I cannot get to seven. But I have to enjoy the going and not the achievement. Otherwise, I'd probably give up. I've had to detach myself from the success metrics in a way. Do you know what I mean? And just enjoy being there.
Hey there. Thought I would just press pause for a moment and ask you. Do you lay in bed at night wondering, is this it? How much is enough? And what the hell am I walking into tomorrow? Do you then wake exhausted
no matter how much sleep you've had? Do you feel like you're operating in robot mode, like nobody's getting the best of you? And perhaps you keep telling yourself, when it's all done, then I'll make time for me. But the reality is, it's never all done, and all you keep doing is moving yourself and your dreams to the bottom of your to-do list. Perhaps you long to feel more present with the people that you love, more connected to meaningful work, and just a little more calm in each day. If this sounds like you, I want you to imagine. Imagine how it would feel to bounce out of bed with the clarity, the courage, and the confidence to live each day in alignment with the life that you've longed for. If you're ready to shift from existing to living, reignite your spark, supercharge your energy, and channel it towards injecting more joy, presence, and meaning into each day, Flourish Forward Coaching was created for you. Go to flourishforwardcoaching.com and book a free clarity call with me today. Now back to the podcast.
You alluded to this earlier, right, about women having too much on their plate, like themselves, and then wondering why they can't be more productive and having too much on their plate. And one of the things I've become a bit, I suppose, concerned about, because it comes up a lot again when women reach out to me, is this word balance. And I have started to say that I actually think, I wrote a post on it the other day, balance is bullshit. And the reason I think it's bullshit is because it creates this elusive state, you know, that everyone is chasing of this work-life balance. And when you ask people, what does it look like and when was the last time you felt it? Like 9 times out of 10, people are like, oh, never. And it's like, because it doesn't exist. And when I say it doesn't exist, when we go back to the earlier conversation about life stages, right? I think that it's not about balance, it's about harmony, and it's about harmony related to prioritization based on the life stage that you're at and understanding what's most important and most meaningful for you at that life stage and just letting all the other stuff go, because there's no way you can have this equilibrium across every aspect of your life. So I'm intrigued in your perspective on this, and what does that look like for the stage of life that you're at?
Yeah, I absolutely don't believe in balance at all, especially as women of our generation and younger. We've been told we can have it all, and I believe we can, but not at the same time.
No, great.
So, yeah, I will have a day where I feel like I've done a pretty good job of being a parent, and then I'll have another day where I think I've done a pretty good job of running my business, and then I might have a day once in a while where I feel I've had a pretty good day at looking after myself. But they're very rarely the same day, and sometimes they're not within the same week. So you can't win on everything all the time. We're trying to be great parents, great friends. I find friendships so difficult to maintain. Run a business, be thin or whatever we're trying to be, fit, eat well, sleep well, drink enough water. Honestly, my to-do list to just be alive at the moment, I've actually got a notes app where it's like drink water, go to the toilet. Do you know what I mean? I will hold a wee in for 6 hours because I'm so busy. You know, what is that about? You know, you get to like 3 o'clock and you've got a dull headache and you're like, ah, because I haven't eaten anything or drunk any fluids today. So just even trying to keep yourself alive is really, really hard. So everything layered on top of that is a challenge. Absolutely don't believe in balance. And my mantra in the book is the world will wait. So you absolutely can have a fantastically successful business if you're willing to spread that butter over more bread. You know, like it may take you 4 months to achieve what somebody has a full week can do in a month, but that's okay, because you're here for the long game. We're here for the long. I want to be doing this until I drop. So I've got loads and loads and loads of time. And I think the biggest problem with parents and business owners is a devout lack of patience. We want everything now. Amazon Prime. We want to be able to binge our life today rather than to have it episodic over months and months and months. And it's this binge immediacy that is causing us to be deeply unhappy, because we cannot wait for our reward. We want our reward now. If we can learn to accept that that is not going to happen, then we can throw away balance and accept, as you said, we have to prioritize. And what our priority today may not be our priority tomorrow. So I 100% agree with you.
I want to talk about the struggle with self-doubt and limiting beliefs and how you've navigated that over your 14 years in business and how you show yourself compassion.
I struggle from comparisonitis a lot. as I said, I feel like I'm on the outer. I feel like everyone is super popular and I'm not. Everyone else is super smart and I'm not. Everyone else is beautiful and I'm not. A different time. If I'm on a good day and I've slept well and I've gone for a wee, then I am more resilient and these things don't get to me so much. So what I've learned to do is separate myself from myself and observe myself. And kind of sometimes you wake up in the morning and you know you're a little bit wobbly. This is going to be a day where it's like, don't be nice to me, don't be nice to me, because I will cry if you're nice to me today. Yeah. And so on those days, I try and dial the dial down, not do as much, not put as much pressure on myself. And then I have other days where I'm on fire. So that's how I manage it. It's not gone away, but I just mitigate it, to be honest. And the more people I speak to, you realize everyone feels like this pretty much all the time. And that's comforting as well. But yeah, I just try and be... I try and monitor my mood and behave appropriate accordingly, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Mm. Let's talk about this book. The title is Magic. Ah, yeah. So Six Figures in School Hours, right? I must say as a mum, I was like, there's no woman who wants to start her own business that title's not going to connect with. How the hell did you land that? Like, that's like magical.
It was magical. You know, they say inspiration, I mean, it literally means the breath of the gods. So I think just got breathed into me one night. So the title came first and the book came second. I'm a writer, so I'm great at coming up with taglines and headlines. And then, you know, so I came up with the title and then the subtitle, which is important as well, how to run a successful business and still be a good parent. Because that to me is the fundamental question. And it's funny, when I sent it out to publishers, a few publishers were like, is that a question? And I'm like, you clearly don't have kids. Because yes, it absolutely is. We all feel like we're sacrificing our kids for our business, or we're doing a crap job of our business because we're looking after our kids. It's constant parent guilt. So it was just a miraculous thing. And now I'm trying to come up with the title of the next book and it's not coming quite so easily. Oh. We'll see how that goes.
So why did you want this book to come out into the world? What was the meaning behind it for you?
Okay, you're going to think a little bit less of me now, but I wanted my little happy moment. Something I've dreamed about my whole life is walking into an airport bookshop and seeing my book on the shelf.
Yeah.
That's something I've wanted for a very long time. And also, I've worked very hard for a very long time and had a very lean, profitable business. I've very rarely invested in myself. Mm. So I like to talk about my book as like my midlife crisis. If I was a man, I might have bought a Harley Davidson. Instead, I probably spent the equivalent of a Harley Davidson on getting this book published, because it ain't cheap, as you know.
Oh.
and I wanted my moment. I wanted, so that was the initial reason. Mm. But then as time has gone on, I really enjoyed the writing process. It was a struggle. It was hard, but I enjoyed the discipline of making myself write it, because I wrote it in 8 weeks, which is quite a brief period of time. And now I am loving. It's slightly egotistical, I guess, but I don't think so. I think it's more connection. Mm. Someone wrote to me on LinkedIn yesterday saying, I've read your book. I read it in 2 days over a flight and a night. And I feel like we would be such good friends. I feel like you're so my person. And I'm like, oh, that's freaking amazing, isn't it? Like, these people all over the world are reading my book and it's freaking amazing. So I don't know. It's kind of filling my cold, dark soul in a way that I didn't think it would. So, yeah.
You touch on something really interesting that's not spoken about a lot. So can I ask, did you self-publish or did you get a publishing deal?
I got a publishing deal. I've self-published before and my book did well, but it was very hard for me to get distribution into bookshops. As I think most people find, I actually wanted to go through the fiery hoop of trying to get a publisher. It was terrifying, because if I'd got rejected, I'm not sure how. I planned the book a year before and I got a meeting with Pan Macmillan and they turned me down and I just completely stopped that project. I shouldn't have done. I should have self-published anyway. Great idea. And I was terrified that I would get rejected and then I wouldn't know what to do with myself, to be honest. But it's been such a thrill to have a real publisher. I'd have no qualms about self-publishing at all. I may self-publish my next book. But yeah, publishing with a real publisher gets you in bookshops at the end of the day in a way that I couldn't have done as a self-published book.
And that's why I asked, right? Because I was the same. I got a publishing deal for my first book. But what I realize is, even though you get an advance, is it's still very expensive.
Yeah.
To get a publishing deal, in terms of, like I was saying, a book's like a really expensive business card.
Really,
it's like
expensive.
It's a credibility stamp, and like it's very powerful in terms of the content that you can, you know, it can create and all of that sort of stuff. But it's not a cheap exercise.
Yeah, I didn't get an advance. In fact, I had a hybrid deal with my publisher where I actually had to invest, mitigate the investment. Because who am I, right? I'm not massively popular and famous. I haven't been on TV. I'm not a radio presenter. It's a very closed circle, the publishing world as well. Oh. Like, really hard to get in. So I actually had to make a commitment to buy 1,000 copies of my book myself from my publisher. And then that kind of was like, it's almost like paying them a fee. You get the books though, so it's a bit weird. And then in return for that, you know, obviously they did the cover, they edited it, but not line edit, like it was more top level edit. And obviously then they help with a little bit of publicity, but not a huge amount. But the main thing is the distribution and the kind of kudos, the official stamp that you are good enough to be on that publisher's list, which elevates you a little bit. But yes, very expensive. And the ROI, to talk in business terms, is not direct, especially with a book like this for me, because it's not directly what I do. You know, I don't coach people, moms in particular, or parents in particular. I just coach general business owners. So it's a little disconnect for me. It's an awareness piece. It's a very expensive marketing adventure, really, because then you add the book launches and the, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot. And it's a luxury that you could only, like, again, if you're starting out and you've got two kids under four, don't be going publishing a book, right? Because I can afford to do this because the rest of my business is doing well. It is a luxury that you can afford at a certain level, I feel. I don't know what you feel about that, but I couldn't have done this when my son was small. I couldn't have afforded it.
No. And I was the same. And I was, I wrote that they gave me a 3 month. I had 3 months to write the book. So you did in 8 weeks. I thought 3 months was good.
It still is. I mean, a lot, isn't it?
It is. But like, I just think that there's this misnomer about book publishing and book deals, and people don't understand that it is a massive investment, not only of time, but of finances as well, to get it off the ground.
Yeah, and also some illuminating statistics that I heard is, you know, in Australia, 4,000 copies sold is considered a bestseller.
It is.
Yeah, and in America, to get on the New York Times bestseller list, you need to sell 9,000 copies in your first week, which is not insignificant, but is nowhere near what I thought it was. It was me thinking it was like 100,000 or something. You know, not many people buy books. I mean, I think it's coming back. A lot of people have enjoyed the Audible version, but again, the Audible version cost me $5,000 to
produce. I know.
I will never make that money back because I think I get like 80 cents every time someone buys the Audible book. So yes, a very expensive marketing exercise, a beautiful, fat, gorgeous business card, but not a moneymaker directly, indirectly maybe.
So I'm interested, given the title of the book, what advice would you give to mothers who are aspiring to start their own businesses but are apprehensive about doing that, having the perfect plan and finding balance within that with children?
A, there's no balance. B, there's no perfect plan. I never wrote a business plan. And my line is, don't wait till all your ducks in a row because one of them will be dead. Or I think you just have to get started. But the biggest thing you're going to have to manage, the biggest challenge you're going to have, is managing your own expectations and your own ego. You think you've got 30 hours a week between drop off and pick up? You haven't. You've maybe got 15 productive hours a week if you're honest. What can you realistically make in that time? Even if you charge yourself out at $200 an hour, which would be hard in this economic climate, you know, what can you really honestly make? And how much of that you're making are you spending on the appearance of having a business? Oh, look at me at this fancy business women's lunch. Oh, look at me at this retreat. None of that is essential. That is artifice. And again, a luxury that rich businesses can afford. I've never been on a retreat or done a mastermind or any of that stuff. I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's expensive. And at the end of the day, that's all coming off my bottom line. And what I find is that lots of business owners get to the end of the year, they've got their Kiki K stationery and they've been to a few women's lunches, but they've not made any bloody money. And at the end of the day, if you want sustainability, you have to do the hard work of working out your time and working out your money. That's the boring bit. It's not about the Canva logos and the Instagram pics. It's the boring spreadsheets is where businesses win or lose. So that's the thing. Manage your ego, your expectations, and the appearance of having a business rather than the reality. I would say that 90% of my business is pretty goddamn boring. And I'm fine with that because a boring business A business that doesn't have highs and lows is a successful business for me. It's not about feast and famine and drama and ups and downs. You want sustainability. You want to turn up each day and know what's going to happen. And you want to know that you've got money coming in next week and the week after. That's a successful business. It may not feel like that. You may want the peaks and troughs, but the peaks and troughs suck in the long term. Your adrenals are up, cortisol is being released. What feels like excitement is actually stress. Yeah. I don't want any stress. So I'm all about continuity, tedium to a degree, and enjoying the process, not the end result.
One more question. What's the question you wish people would ask you but they never do? Or the one thing that you'd love to talk about that just never gets the light of day?
Oh, I think I'm pretty lucky in that people do ask me about blooming everything because I'm quite an open book. Yeah. I mean, I guess at the moment I'm quite passionate about the fact, I don't want to be preachy here, but I spent a long time being very unhappy. You know, I've had anxiety and depression my whole life, and I blamed everything other than one of the main causes of that. And for me, that was drinking. Not in a big amount. It's not like I was necking a bottle of whiskey before 7 o'clock in the morning, but just the perpetual habit of a glass of wine every other night that turned into two, that turned into three, and then in COVID, God knows what happened. Removing that from my life has been the single most amazing thing. Is it hard? Yes, impossibly so. And I have not been perfect. But it just has stripped away a layer of anxiety and depression that's been with me my whole life. And I never put two and two together. So I wish I could talk about that more without it putting people off and making them think I'm some preachy kind of worthy beast. Because I'm not. I like a drink as much as the next person. But you have to look at what's serving you. And it wasn't serving me at all.
It's so interesting because you touched again earlier on menopause and perimenopause. And I did a podcast with a friend of mine after a conversation around this because I was like, oh, I mustn't be in that. You know, I'm not having hot sweats or anything like that. But I'd started to notice in the last 12 months when I drink red wine, like I'm not, again, I've never suffered from anxiety, but I would wake in the middle of the night and I would be.
3 o'clock. Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell is wrong with me? Like, what the hell? And apparently there's a direct correlation.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. At 3 o'clock, your body comes down from all the cortisol and starts cleaning and it wakes you up. It's in a panic. It literally tells your brain to wake up. And so then you sit there at 3 o'clock and worry about everything in the world for about an hour and a half, go back to sleep and then wake up the next day and feel awful.
Yes.
God. Claw that red wine from my cold dead hands. You know, it's like the one thing that you're using to make yourself feel relaxed and happy is actually the cause of you feeling unhappy. Yeah, exactly. It's a real challenge. And I still associate alcohol with good times and fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, still occasionally we'll have a glass here or there and try not to beat myself up about it too much because, you know, we're only human. But yeah, that was a huge connection that I just refused to make. And now that I've made that connection, I've kind of ruined it for myself. Like I can never really enjoy alcohol fully ever again, which is a bit of a shame because what else have you got? Then you have to sit with your feelings and feel them every day with no escape. It's horrific, but it gets easier.
Mm. Hey, where can people find out about you and your work?
Well, you can start at katetoon.com. That's kind of my hub site where everything else, or Google Six Figures in School Hours. I've got about 72 podcasts, lots of Facebook groups and lots of different places. So you can choose your own adventure.
Thank you so much for your time today. You certainly did not disappoint and you exceeded expectations. And I was excited and it's been beautiful. So thank you.
Well, I can't wait to have you back on my podcast. So look out for that, everybody, or listen out for that. We're doing a pod swap. So I'll have you on my podcast very soon.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on today's episode of the Hacking Happy podcast. Reviews are so important to empowering more beautiful humans like you to lead wholehearted and happy lives. If you enjoyed your experience today, I'd love if you could take a moment to leave a review and a rating on your preferred podcast listening platform. If there was something in this particular episode that resonated, feel free to take a screenshot and share your perspectives on social media. Tag me in via Instagram on hackinghappy.co or you'll find me on LinkedIn, Penny Lacasso. If you have a friend that you feel needs to hear the message in today's podcast, why not drop them a note and share the link from this episode? Until next time, my friend, happiness looks good on you.